Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Courtney. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 9th, 2010, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor other women, and I'm available to sponsor other women. I feel very honored to be speaking in front of all of you guys tonight. I don't think Amanda knew, but tomorrow I will have lived here for 1 year, and this was the first meeting that I came to. Megan, who's here tonight, I saw her, picked me up, and I had never met her. I didn't know anyone in Tampa, but I contacted someone who I didn't even know. One of my friends in Virginia Beach knew him, and then he got me in touch with Megan, and she brought me here, and then I met Angelica, and Angelica took me to my interview the next day, and it was just like the perfect example of how AA works. Like, I didn't know any of you guys, and everyone helped me out the whole, you know, period of time that I was here, so it was wonderful. And then moved here July 25th, so that will be tomorrow, so it's great to be speaking here. Let's see, I was born in Virginia Beach and raised in Virginia Beach. My dad was in the Marine Corps, and he retired when I was really young because I didn't remember who he was when he came back from deployment, so he decided that that wasn't, you know, what he needed to be doing. But he was in for like 24 years, so it was fine anyways. And so growing up, everything was always, I don't know, like inside I felt like this all the time. I used to have like really weird habits. Like, I would hated wrinkles and would like iron my clothes while they were on my body, and I have like scars on my body from doing that. Just like all these like really weird things. Like, I don't know, like if you ask my mom, like she, like I used to just have all these weird like tics, like just constantly like just so anxious, you know what I mean? And my mom was raised Jewish and my dad was raised Catholic, so when they got married, I guess the consensus was like nothing, no God in the house. We're just gonna get rid of any spirituality or anything. So there was just no spirituality, no God, no religion, none of that. You were just everyone, there's four in my family. I have an older sister, my mom, my dad, and everyone was just trying to run the show themselves. So it was just a huge cluster mess. And so that's kind of like how my childhood was, though. Like, I was constantly like searching, like always really anxious, like searching to like fill that hole inside of me. And my dad drank, you know, he's an alcoholic, but he was always trying to control it. Like, I remember the period where he drank non-alcoholic beer and I was like really excited, or he drank wine, but then he had three bottles of wine, so then no more wine, or like, you know, gin, but then fell over, so no more gin. And it was just like this constant, like trying to control it, type deal. And so eventually, you know, I grew up or whatever. Well, I didn't grow out of all of those weird things. Still had all those weird things. But when I started school, then it kind of turned into like being like obsessed with school and like my grades and all that. And that was like a lot of pressure because, like I said, my dad was in the military. So you were just expected to be perfect. Like, that was just the expectation. Like, if you're going to go to school, then you just have to make straight A's. If you're going to play this sport, then you're just going to be the best. Like, that's the way it is. And so, you know, I was always like, you know, really into school and everything. I had the best group of friends in middle school. You know, we were all like really smart and everything. And my sister had started drinking. I was when she was a freshman in high school, and it like absolutely destroyed me. Like, I swore that she ruined my life. Like, I absolutely hated my sister. Like, she would call me on the way home, like puking on herself and driving, and then she would come home and like my parents would fight over my sister, like what to do with her, and like it was just constant like fighting in the house, you know, really bad stuff going on. And so I used to like go to bed at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I did not want to be awake for when she would sneak out at night or anything like that. I was just like, you know, I was kind of like the mediator. So my parents would fight and then I would try to calm everyone down. It was just like really stressful. And so I swore I was never going to be like my sister. I was never going to be like my dad. Everyone in my dad's family, they're all like meth addicts. I was never going to be like any of them. You know, I was gonna be perfect little Courtney. And then My sister went away to college, so that was like really nice. She was gone. And my parents ended up getting divorced, and I was so mad at them. Like, how dare them ruin my idea of like this perfect family? You know what I mean? Like, what that is supposed to look like. I was absolutely embarrassed, like, wouldn't tell any of my friends because I had this, you know, wonderful group of girlfriends, and their parents were all together, and they were, you know, everyone was doing the right thing, and that's not what my family looked like. So I was really embarrassed. And around that time, I played volleyball, and I decided that I wanted to start hanging out with some of the girls on the volleyball team who were, like, really cool. And so I went to, there's this place in Virginia Beach, Hunt Club Farm, and it has, like, a haunted hayride and stuff. And so that night, wait, let me back up. Okay, in eighth grade, with my little perfect little friends, we decided we were going to drink. I totally forgot about this. And my friend's mom was having a party at her house. And so we, you know, we're like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to drink tonight. And so we got whatever we could out of the kitchen. We got, like, Gatorade and vodka and took it up to the bedroom. And I remember, like, I had a volleyball tournament the next day, so I, you know, the consequences already, like, I wasn't even thinking about any of this stuff. And my two friends, like, had a sip or whatever, and they were, like, dancing, and it was, like, a good time. It was so weird. And I'm, like, sitting there, like, waiting. I'm, like, literally sitting on the bed. They're, like, dancing, and I'm waiting for, like, the effect. Like, I'm waiting for something to happen because everyone in my family drank, and they loved it. I'm, like, waiting to, like, see what this is all about. And in the middle of, you know, us, like, getting drunk, I guess, we got caught and had to call my parents and, you know, all this stuff. And my dad just laughed. My mom cried, which is like the kind of what happens. My mom just cries about everything. And of course, I didn't get punished. No punishment, just cries. That's it. And so I didn't drink after that until ninth grade year. And so the Hunt Club Farm, the girls that I was hanging out with had an older sister who was my sister's age, and she was having a party at her house. So anyways, we go back to her house, and we decided to drink, and I had Mountain Dew and Grey Goose. And this was like the first time that I got drunk. I remember I was sitting on the couch and just drinking. I didn't get up. They just were bringing me the drinks. I didn't get up. And so I'm just like drinking a lot, and then I stand up, and I was like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, it was literally the best feeling I had ever experienced in my whole entire life. Like, I just felt, like, so just everything I had been looking for was there. Like, I had found the solution, definitely. And I was puking all night. Like, I got so sick, and I never really smoked weed but a handful of times, and they were like shoving it in my face, and it smelled so bad, and it was just like so miserable, but I loved it. And the next day my mom picked me up, and I used to get like really car sick, and so we're in the car and she's driving me home, and I'm like, stop pressing on the gas so fast, like, stop pressing on the brakes, like, you're a horrible driver, I'm getting so sick. And she was like, okay, like, she thought, you know, I was getting car sick, and I was really hungover. And after that, like, that was the first time that I got really drunk, and then it was like all downhill immediately from there. You know, I was drinking every weekend, and then eventually I started to drink before school. And, you know, my friends, I kind of stopped hanging out with those good group of friends that I had. And, you know, I would like say, I had classes with them, and I would like say, you know, try to tell them about my weekend, how much fun it was, and they just like did not think it was cool at all. And, yeah, actually now they try to bring it up again. I'm like, stop, that's so embarrassing that I would even think that that was like cool to talk about. I don't know. And so I stopped hanging out with them, and, you know, still like going out. But everyone kind of thought it was funny because, you know, I was still like making straight A's in school, you know, playing volleyball and all that stuff, you know, traveling on the weekends for volleyball and everything. And like, I would come to school drunk, and my friends would just laugh like, what are you doing? Like, you're so silly. But really, I know that like on the inside, like, I was kind of like, someone help me, you know what I mean? Like, you guys aren't coming to school drunk like I am. Someone help me out here. And, like, the teachers didn't really know what to do. Like, I would only go to school like 3 days a week, but I, like I said, I was making really good grades, so like that was okay, I guess. Like they didn't really know what to do, and so my mom didn't know that I was drinking, but she knew something was going on because I wasn't talking to her, so she decided I needed to see a therapist. So I started to see a therapist that year, and who happened to be in AA, and I just, you know, well, actually, I was seeing a different therapist. Then she said, I think we need to send you to someone who specializes in alcoholism. I was like, what are you talking about? No way. But I ended up seeing her, and she was in AA. And I just, you know, would tell her, it's my dad's fault, it's my sister's fault, it's everyone else's fault in the world. Like, if they would just listen to me, then everything would be okay. And, you know, I saw her for a really long time, like 5 years, and just... Like, I even made, my mom brought this up the other day. She was like, you even, like, made me, you know, allow you to see her, like, 2 to 3 times a week. Like, what were you guys talking about? And honestly, I have no clue what we were doing. Like, I really have no clue. I remember at, one of the first sessions, she made me make, like, a pie chart of how much, like, family meant to me and school and alcohol. And, like, each year we would do that and alcohol would get better or bigger. But that's really the only thing that I can remember doing besides, like, talking. And I would go to, you know, her office drunk and, like, lay on the couch. And I don't know, it was just really a waste of time is really what it was. And so... You know, I went throughout high school and, you know, alcohol obviously was, you know, getting worse and worse. And I would just do, like, stupid things, you know, I don't even know, just the stupid things that we do. And so I was getting ready to go to college. And my therapist, you know, at this point, she's like, we're going to have to, you know, cut it off. Like, you're going away to school. And I'm like, have your phone number? Like, I don't even know. And so she told me that every time you want to drink, because I had made this decision, like, I'm going to a college where no one knows me. You know, I'm going to, like, start fresh. Like, I had already, like, made friends on Facebook with people that were going there that, like, didn't drink. And so it was, like, going to be, like, really great. And she said, every time you want to drink, journal. And I was like, okay, you know, she told me to journal to God. And I was like, whoa, no. Like, because like I said, we had no God growing up. Like, I would stay the night at my friend's house and they would go to church and I would make them drive me home in the morning because that was just, it just freaked me out. Like, I thought someone was in control of me and I was in control of the world. So, she told me to journal to God, and I was like, I don't know about that. And she just told me to fake it till you make it. Just write, Dear God, and then journal. And I was like, okay. So the first week of school, I was writing to God a lot. And I actually still have the journal, and I'm going to back up. When she told me, you know, before we tried this journaling thing, and she said, whenever you want to drink, journal. And so I have in there on May 9th, it was like the perfect example of alcoholism. That morning I had journaled that I wanted to drink, but I couldn't because I had volleyball practice and all this stuff. And then later on, May 9th, at the top it's like later May 9th, okay, I just had one sip of alcohol, like I feel so much better, blah, blah. And then it's later May 9th, I'm crawling on the inside, like I really need more alcohol, blah, blah, like I don't understand what's going on. And May 9th actually happens to be my sobriety date, so I keep that journal. It's really cool to kind of look back and see like how I was feeling during that time. But anyway, so I started journaling to God while I was in college, and one of the entries is, I just ran out of printer ink and I didn't drink. Aren't you proud of me, God? Like, that's the stuff that I used to drink over, was like running out of printer ink. Like, who drinks over that? But those are the types of things that, like, I don't know how to handle that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to handle being sad, being happy, like running out of printer ink. Like, I literally just did not know how to handle life. And so, anyways, that was a week. It lasted a week, and then I found the people who were just like me and started going out with them, and it took on a whole new different spin being in college. I was like free, kind of. And so my grades, I still maintain my grades, but like it just, my study habits were kind of going downhill. Like, study beers were getting in the way of actually studying. And I took my first test and was like really hungover slash drunk still probably, and I got it back, and like my writing was down, you know, crooked down the page, and it was just not good. And I was like, after that, you know, I was so scared that I wasn't going to make straight A's that semester, like, and it was going to be the worst thing in the world. And but I didn't know how to handle it, so I continued to drink and would just bring the alcohol in my backpack so after the test I could drink instead of before the test. And it was just a huge mess. And my sister lived in Northern Virginia, and so I would, like, drive 2 hours to get her fake ID, come back, buy, like, all the alcohol in the store, and then drive it back to her, like, that night, and then come home, and then go out. And it was just, like, the lengths that I went to get drunk were just incredible. I'm glad I don't have to put that energy into things anymore, because that was just really stressful. But so first year, like, drank a lot, and then came home from school that during the summer and was drinking a lot. Drank for like 4 days straight, and I remember one of my really good friends got a DUI, and I'm sitting on the beach with like two of my friends. I'm like, oh, doesn't he know? Like, his life is ruined. Like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, doesn't he, like, know that now he's never going to be able to do X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's so stupid. Like, seriously, like, that's what I was saying. And 2 days later, I'm going out, and I always would drink and drive. Like, that was, like, my thing. My friends would be sober, and I would drive, because I just had to be in control. And sometimes they wouldn't get in the car with me, though, because, like, during the day, I would always have alcohol in my cup holders, just in case. You never really know when you need a sip of alcohol. And so they would be like, what are you doing? Like, I can't get in the car with you. You have alcohol in your car. And I'm like, it's okay, because I'm the perfect driver. You know, I'm in control. It's okay. And so that night, you know, I'd been drinking for like 4 days, dropped off my friend, and was like calling all these people to like search for the party. The party was over. Like, it's done. I needed to go home. But I was like on, you know, a search for somewhere to go. And I remember I was texting and turned, and I'm blaming it on the texting, even though I was drunk, but I looked down, I looked up and swerved, because I was texting, and sirens were going off behind me. I was like, shoot. And so he, like, comes over to the window, and I crack it, like, this much. Mind you, there's alcohol all in my car, like, it's a mess. And he was like, have you been drinking? And I was like, no, sir, I swear, I was texting, you know, I swerved because I was texting, like, I just kept saying it. And he was like, are you sure you haven't been drinking? And I was like, yes, I have. I just figured I would admit it. And he was like, can you please, like, roll down your window? And so I rolled down the window, and he made me get out of the car and, you know, do the little tests and everything. And then even that, he was like, do you want to not do the test? I don't even know. I guess there's like two options. And I asked him, I was like, can I call my dad and ask him which one I should do? And he was like, no, like, you got yourself into this. Like, no, you can't call your dad. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just do them, because I thought that I was going to be able to pass. And so I, like, took off my shoes and did the test, and I guess I failed, even though I swear I did really well. I still think that I really did. And he put the handcuffs on me, but he put them on me really loose because he didn't want to hurt me. And then he allowed me to sit in the front seat of the car, and he was, like, really nice. Called, like, all my friends were calling, like, you know, all night, because they were really worried about me. And so he answered the phone, and, like, then he called my stepmom to, like, let her know what time I was going to be ready, so that she was there, like, waiting for me to get picked up. And got to the jail and got to, like, cut in front of everyone and had, like, my own cell. Like, it was great. And like, it was really fun. I was convinced, I was like, only stupid people get DUIs, so, like, these people are not going to think that I'm stupid. So I was, like, talking to them like I was really smart. I'm not. And so they, like, were like, oh, you know, this is me in my drunk mind. Then I thought that they, like, gained my respect or whatever. So like, they did not care at all. And so then I woke up, I was in jail overnight, not that long. My stepmom was there, you know, when I got out for me, and I thought that was the end of it. I did not think my dad was going to find out. I didn't think my mom was going to find out. Like, I thought that was just it. Like, that was the end. Like, I got a DUI, and that was the end of it. And it was just going to be between me and my stepmom. And so I got home, and I was, like, throwing up, and I hear was like stomping, and I was like, shit, my dad's awake, and he comes downstairs. What's going on? And I don't know how he knew, but he knew what was going on. I guess he was really surprised that I was at his house, because I never would go over there. And he comes in the room, he's like, what did you do? Your life is over, like, you're not going back to school, like, you're done, blah, 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 like, screaming at me. And then walked out and walked back in, and he was like, this is all my fault, like, I did this, I'm an alcoholic, like, I did this to you. And then he walked out and he came back in and he was like, all right, we're gonna handle this. And I'm like, I have never seen like so many emotions in such a short period of time. And I was like, yeah, we're gonna handle this. And so I told him that night. He remembers exactly what I said, but something to the effect of like, don't worry, I'm not gonna drink again. And so after that I called my therapist, and she was like, you need to go to a meeting. And so I went to a meeting, and in Virginia Beach at this place, it's like at the Goodwill. And you don't go to this meeting, like, no, you know, if you ever visit Virginia Beach, or, well, I guess, anyways, people that live there know, like, not to go to this meeting, but that was my first meeting. And so I went there, and it's in this room, and there's couches all along the side, and chairs, like, in the middle. It's, like, really disgusting place. And people were sitting all in the couches, and no one was sitting in the middle. And I walked in late because I couldn't find it. I was really confused. I thought it was, like, in its own building, but it was, like, in the back of the Goodwill, like, in this weird place. And so I walked in, and, like, it was a two-seater couch, and I, like, beelined and sat right in between these two people. And all the chairs were open. They were like, what is going on? And so I, like, sat there, and I remember they talked about the seventh step, and someone, like, stood up to share, and they shared that they got a DUI. And for some reason, I don't really remember, like, anything beyond that. They talked about humility or something. I don't really know what was going on at all. But I felt like I was at home. Like, I felt like this is exactly where I belong, you know? And after the meeting, this lady came up to me, and she was like, we need to get you to some other meetings. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And so there was a young people's meeting that Friday night, and I went there, and there was tons of people just like today, you know, that were my age and shared about, you know, similar things. And after the meeting, in Virginia Beach, you have to introduce yourself for the first 30 days. And so after the meeting, of course, it was like everyone came up to me. And I remember walking into this meeting and seeing this lady, and I was like, ugh, like, you know, judging her, like, who is she, blah, blah, blah. And after the meeting, I happened to talk to her the most, and she sat me down, and I was like, you don't understand, like, I can't be an alcoholic. Like, even though when I was drinking, me and my friends used to always say, like, we're alcoholics, and, like, I thought that, you know, that qualified me to, like, do the things that I did, you know, because I was an alcoholic, so you guys can just, like, forgive me. And but when it came time to it, time to, like, actually admit I was an alcoholic, I was like, no, 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 you don't understand. I was like, I'm too young, like, all this stuff, like, I'm too smart, I'm, you know, this, I'm this, I'm this. And she would just, like, open the big book and show me exactly where it says in the book, you know, this is true of young people, like, potential alcoholics, blah, 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 or women, they're gone beyond recall within, you know, 4 years, and all this stuff. And I was like, dang it, like, literally everything I said, she, like, had something to counteract it. And I was like, okay, all right, you know, whatever. And I talked to her for like an hour, and then she gave me a big book, and they told me I needed to bring it back the next week. And so she said, read the first 4 chapters and see if you can relate. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm very booky, I'll do that. And so I remember, you know, I read the doctor's opinion, and that part where it says restless, irritable, and discontented until experiencing ease and comfort with alcohol, I was like, oh my gosh, like, no one had ever put it in those words before, but that is exactly how I felt. Like, this, like I demonstrated in the beginning, that was like restless, irritable, and discontent my whole entire life. And I knew, like, when I drank, literally just with one sip, like, it's gonna be okay. Like, that's exactly how I felt. Like, at once, like it says at once, like, I at once felt like everything was gonna be okay. And so I loved everything it said in the doctor's opinion, and I skipped Bill's story because I didn't know who Bill was, and I did not care about Bill. And then I read more about alcoholism and there's a solution, and I could really relate. And then We Agnostics, I was like, no, not reading that. And it just, like, didn't even understand any of it. And she actually told me beforehand, she was like, you might, like, think that the English is really bad, blah, blah, blah. So I thought that meant I was supposed to, like, edit it as I was going through. So I was, like, making, like, all these corrections about, like, punctuation, like, all this stuff as I was reading. Because she told me to take notes, but I thought, she wanted me to, like, take notes to, like, relate to it, but I was taking notes, like, how I thought it should be written, yeah, to correct it. And so then I was seeing a different therapist at the time, and she was also in AA. I've been very blessed. They're just trying to get me to AA. They don't really do anything else. They're just like, you need to go to AA. And so I saw her, and she was like, have you gotten a sponsor? This was like 2 weeks later or something, and I was like, no. But there was this lady who sat me down at a meeting, and I really related to her, and I really liked everything she had to say, but I haven't seen her since. And I went to a meeting that night, and she walked in late, and so that was like the first, like, God moment I had, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I guess I need to ask her to be my sponsor. So I went up to her after the meeting, and I was like, hey, do you think that maybe you could be my sponsor? And she laughed, which is like a common thing that she does. She laughed, and she said, yeah, it's kind of like asking someone to be your Valentine, isn't it? And I was like, I've never really done that, but I suppose that, you know, that's what it would be like. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I said, yeah. I didn't really know what that meant, but I was like, sure. And so she was like, all right, meet me tomorrow morning at Mount Trashmore, which is this place in Virginia Beach. And it actually is like a landfill, but it's really nice. And it's in like history books and stuff. Like, people learn about it. It's like a park, almost, like a national park. It doesn't like smell bad or anything. And so she was like, meet me at Mount Trashmore. I was like, okay. And so got there, and we started reading the book. And actually, I had, like, shown her. I was like, look, I got, like, The Women's Way Through the 12 Steps. And she was like, throw that away. That's not the big book. That's not the 12 Steps. And I'm like, okay. And so she was like, you need a hardback big book because you're going to be carrying it with you everywhere. And I was like, okay. And so I met her at Mount Trashmore, and we started reading the book from the very front page. And I was so annoyed. Like, we read the table of contents. We read the foreword. We read the preface, we read like everything, and I'm like, all I wanted to do was get to the doctor's opinion because I loved it so much. And like, going through all that stuff, like, she like read the ISBN number and like all this, everything, like literally everything. And I do it with my sponsees now because that's how I was done with me, but I know they just like look at me like, what is going on? I'm like, it's in the Library of Congress, like, that's really cool. And so that took like 3 weeks probably to get through all of that stuff before we got to the doctor's opinion. And so we get to the doctor's opinion, and, you know, again, we got to that part about the restless, irritable, and discontent, and she explained the whole spiritual malady, you know, to me, and how that's really what I was suffering from, and the mental obsession, and, like, that was my life. Like, my life, I constantly thought about alcohol, like, 24 hours a day, you know, how I was going to arrange things, go to get my sister's ID, to get the alcohol, to save the alcohol, to, like, you know, my life revolved around alcohol. And, okay, and so then, you know, we got through the first step, you know, I saw, like, how my life was unmanageable and how I was powerless over alcohol. And we got to the second step, and I was like, no. Like, I'm not believing in this whole God thing. But there had been a few things that had happened before that, like, made me a little bit more open to it. So we started reading, and we got to the point where it says, like, God either is everything or else he's nothing. What's your point to be? Or what's your choice to be? And she looked at me, and she's like, so, what's your choice? And I was like, shoot, like, everything or nothing. Like, I wanted God to just be my alcoholism. I didn't want God to be, you know, everything. Like, I didn't want him to have control over my whole life. And so I was like, everything. She's like, all right. And so then we, like, did the second step, and you know, I had that willingness to believe. You know, I didn't quite believe yet, but I was just willing. And so she said, don't come over my house again until you have, like, a lot of time. I was like, okay. And so I went over her house the next time, because now we're getting to read how it works. And so we started reading it, and then we got to the third step prayer. I mean, I was totally the actor, you know, doing that whole thing. Got to the third step prayer, and she was like, we are in her kitchen. She's like, all right, let's get on our knees and say this prayer. And I just freaked out, like, no, no, no. Like, I thought that, like, God was going to come down and strike me and, like, take away, like, I don't know what I thought, but, like, I was just going to, like, not feel myself or like something really weird. And so I started crying and she laughed. And like we went back and sat at the kitchen table and she like shared her experience with me. And then I calmed down and then we got back on our knees and did the third step prayer. And I did feel a sense of relief. You know what I mean? It was like, like nothing happened, which was almost the relief that I got. Like, you know what I mean? It was like, that was actually like nice. Like that was good. And she was like, all right, you know, the next line in there or something is like, good job, but this doesn't have any permanent effect unless followed at once by house cleaning. So she gave me the paper and made me sit there all night till like wee hours of the morning and do my fourth step and till it was done. And then I was really, really tired, so we didn't do my fifth step that night. And then I ended up going back to school because now it was the end of the summer. And she moved to California. We still hadn't done my fifth step, which I would not advise anyone. And so I was at school for a little bit, like going a little crazy in my head. And so she flew back from California and I drove back to Virginia Beach. We met there and did it. And, you know, I always hear people talk about, you know, the fifth step is like, you know, they have the spiritual experience. But I think mine really, like, I actually started to change during the fourth step, because when I did the fourth step, I literally did not think I was selfish or self-centered or any of that, ever, until I did the fourth step, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm a spoiled, selfish brat, like, this is really embarrassing, and so it was not good. And so then we did the fifth step, and then she said, now go home for an hour and sit quietly. I had not started meditating or anything yet, so I went home for like 5 minutes and sat quietly and then like got up. And I think for like my first 2 years I was scared that I was going to get drunk because I didn't sit down for the full 60 minutes that she told me to, but it's okay if you don't make it the whole hour. And so then after that I went back, you know, and met with her, and we did the seventh step prayer. And she makes a really good analogy with the sixth and seventh step that I'm going to share. She says it's like a yard sale. So when you have a yard sale, you like gather up all your old junk that you want to sell, and you put it out on your lawn, and some of the stuff gets sold, some of the stuff doesn't get sold, and the stuff that doesn't get sold, you have to like bring back into your house. And then the next time you have a yard sale, you put it out again, and some of the stuff will go, some of the stuff won't go. And that's kind of like how it is with my character defects. You know, I put them all out there for God to take away. And some of the things that I think are really defective, I guess, God might not. And they're not standing in the way of me being useful to other people. So that, you know, might not get removed then. And so I'll just, you know, continue to pray about it. And I love 6 and 7 today. Like, I try to, like, stay there. Like, always willing for God to remove my defects of character. Then the 8th step, she was like, so that inventory, all those people on there, that's the people that you're going to make amends to. And I was like, what? Like, I thought that was done. But then all those people on there were the people I had to make amends to. And so my first amends was to the library, because I had taken out, like, 30 self-help books and didn't return them. And so I had to like pay back the library, and I was so scared, but it was okay. And then I also used to like steal a lot, and I stole from the Goodwill. Actually, I stole this shirt for a hobos and hoes party from the Goodwill. It was really not good. And so I had to go to the Goodwill and pay back that. And then I started to make amends to my family members, but they were like already kind of accepted, like, we've seen that you've changed, you know. And that was really nice. I made, my sister was the one person who I swore ruined my life, and she came to visit me at school, and I had been praying about it and talking to my sponsor, and I, you know, decided that I was going to make amends to her then. And so I made amends to her, and then that night she went to her first meeting, and she's been sober ever since. So that was really nice. That was really cool. And I love the 9th step. God, like, puts people in my life right at the exact moment. And like, some, you know, my first sponsor used to always say that, like, you're never really done, because, like, you don't really know all the people that you've hurt. And I've found that to be true. Like, one day, this kid called me from, like, middle school and was yelling at me about how I ruined his life. And he was drunk, but I remember exactly what I did, and it was really, really, really mean. And so I called him the next day and, like, got to make amends to him, you know, for that. And he was more embarrassed that he called me when he was really drunk, but still, like, you know, that I distinctly remember what I did, and it was really messed up, so it was kind of nice to have that conversation with him. And then the 10th step, I still try to take, you know, inventory on a daily basis, you know, to try to keep up with that kind of stuff. I will say, for the first, like, until this past year, which I'll get to, a lot of changes happened this past year. Until this past year, every single day, this is part of like my, you know, rigidity. Every single day I would wake up and read pages 86 through 88 and, you know, meditate for 15 minutes and set my timer and like do all these things. And at night, you know, it says, you know, basically when we retire at night and all those questions, and I would write them all out, like seriously, for 2 years, like every single day. And finally I moved here and I got a new sponsor, and she was like, that has to stop. Like, that is not, like, that is crazy. You know, that's not really having a relationship with God. Like, that's just being, like, you know, having this, like, routine. And so I've grown a lot in 10, 11, and 12 this past year. You know, she was like, try meditating at night. Try not setting a timer. Try doing different things, you know. And that's been really nice. It's opened my eyes to a lot. I'll share another story about the 11th step, and 9th step. I don't know, whatever, all of them. So my sister, she got sober, and of course she wasn't doing it how I wanted her to do it, not the way that I did it, and even though she was, but I'm just really judgmental of her. And so I would take inventory on her, like, all the time, you know what I mean? I would see my part, like, I'm being selfish, you know what I mean? Like, she has her own God, like, all this stuff, but, like, it just, and I would pray, you know, for God to remove it, da da da, and it just, like, would always crop up. Like, every time she made a decision, I would think it was the wrong one. And, you know, she's doing everything out of order. Like, she got, like, they found a wedding venue before she got engaged and, like, all this stuff. And I'm like, that's so wrong. Like, you know, all this stuff. And so finally, like, I took inventory on it again and brought it to my new sponsor. And she was like, what I want you to do is pray for God to bless your sister and change you for 21 days. And I was like, that's so stupid. Show me where it says that in the big book. And but I really trust her. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll do, I agreed in the beginning to go to any lengths. So I agreed to do it. And in the midst of that, you know, 21-day period, I actually went and visited my sister. She was graduating from nursing school. And the whole entire time she kept saying, this is the best visit we've ever had. Like, we haven't fought or anything at all. Like, this is so great, blah, 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 like, all this stuff. And I didn't tell her, like, yeah, I've been praying for you, you know, or anything like that. Or anything like that. But it was just, like, the perfect, like, I don't know, exactly what I needed, like, God had changed me, you know what I mean, and my relationship with my sister. And ever since then, like, our relationship has been great. Like, I'm going to be, you know, her maid of honor in her wedding, which I would expect to be because I'm her sister, but, and she likes me, so, you know, that helps too. But, so our relationship has gotten so much better, and it's a lot, you know, it is through all the prayer and meditation and, that, and opening my eyes to not being so rigid. Like, although it is ingrained in me, like, literally my eyes open, I'm like, on awakening, let us think about 20, like, my brain just, like, repeats it when I wake up, but, you know, I don't, like, do my routine like I used to do, which is really nice. It's helped me to develop a relationship with God deeper. And the 12th step, you know, working with other people is definitely, like, the bright spot to my life. I remember the first time I was sponsoring this lady, and she's, like, my mom's age. She had lost her kids, like, you know, really, like, low, low, low. And I remember we did her 4th step, and after that, like, you know where it talks about in the beginning of working with others, like, this is something you would not want to miss. I was, like, freaking out. It was, like, the best thing ever. She was, like, so excited. You know, after she did it, had this huge aha moment. I was like, this is exactly what it's all about, like, working with other people. And I love being able to bring people through the steps, especially because, like, no one trusted me when I was drinking. And now people actually tell me things, and, like, I don't tell people, which is, like, a miracle. You know, it's really God working in my life. And I don't know, my life is so different today. This past year has been a lot of change. My sponsor says, you know, the only thing we can absolutely count on is change. And she always shares this story about this lady who had been sober for a really long time. And, you know, it was one of my sponsors, like, first weekend sober. And she brought her to her house and, like, you know, made her dinner and stuff, like, really nice because she thought she was going to drink. And then, you know, like, 10 years later, whatever, she was sitting with that lady. And the lady said, you know, I just don't want to change anymore. Like, I just want everything to stay the same. And a year later, she ended up drinking and fell off a boat in Nantucket and died. And so, you know, she always says, like, you have to always be willing to change. And this past year, that's definitely been true for me. You know, I moved here. I had to make, like, all new friends. That's, like, was huge. You know, I had my AA friends in Fredericksburg went to school, my AA friends in Virginia Beach, like, people knew me, and then coming here and having to make, you know, new friends and all that stuff, and, you know, getting out of relationship, I got out of a 6.5-year relationship with the help of God, which was, like, great, and, like, I know everything's going to be okay, and that was a huge change. My dad's sober, too. I forgot to mention that. My sister, when she celebrated, like, a year, I guess, she, like, told her story, and then after that, he got sober. So he celebrated two years this past year. Yeah, so that's been really great. My mom's in a 12-step program now, so, like, it's really funny because, obviously, like, each of us running the show and not having gotten our lives, like, did not work out great because we're all in 12-step programs now. So that's been really great. My mom moved down to be with her family, so a lot of change has been going on. Also, just, I know that I normally don't talk about this stuff, but it's a young people's meeting, and I think that, you know, getting sober when you're young just opens up the whole entire world. Like, anything that you ever want to do is a possibility, and when I graduated, which, you know, when I started college, it was, like, not looking too hot, and I ended up graduating first in my class, and it was, like, it literally was the best day of my life. I'm going to cry just thinking about it. Like, standing up there, and I was crying hysterically, and all I could think about was, like, you know, everyone's, like, standing and screaming, and, like, I'm an alcoholic and, like, should not be here at all. You know what I mean? Like, I did not deserve that. Like, it was just the craziest experience ever. Like, I just wanted to scream, like, from the mic, like, I'm an alcoholic. Like, all you people, like, you know, because, like, it is, like, but I don't know, I didn't do that. And it was actually really weird because I was, like, crying hysterically, and they're, like, taking pictures, and the pictures go up on the website, and it was horrible. And I, like, look back to the girl the year before. She's, like, smiling, looks all happy and stuff, and I'm, like, literally, I just did not deserve this. Like, it was just crazy. And, you know, those are the blessings that we get when we are able to stay sober. And, you know, I started doing something this week, and I talked to my sponsor afterwards. I'm in grad school now, and she was like, yeah, after you get your PhD, you might want to, you know, get your MD, because all the possibilities are there. And, like, not that I would ever do that, because that's just crazy. But it just made me think, like, really, what a great opportunity. Like, when you get sober, no matter really how old you are, you know, we can do anything as long as I stay sober. You know what I mean? And I think that's, like, the hope in the program. Like, go through bad stuff, go through good stuff. Like, no matter what happens, like, I know as long as I stay sober and keep that relationship with God, which is, like, the most important thing in my life today, which is really weird because I didn't have a God in my life before, that, you know, I know everything's going to be okay. And, like, God's got me. That's, like, you know, the best feeling ever. And so, I don't know. That's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.